CKUT Radio 90.3 FM in Montreal.
What's up, what's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Yeah. I don't usually do this, but
Oh my God.
Can I sing to you? Yeah.
Yours, mine. Talk to you for hours. I wanna give you your flowers and some champagne showers, all the shrimp and lobster towers. But it's me that gets devoured. Ooh, when you do what you do, I'm empowered. You give me a superpower. Together the world could be ours. You sit me up on the counter, instantly it's thunder showers, storming for a couple hours. When we finish, take a shower. I could do this for hours and hours and hours. I could do this for hours and hours and hours. I could do this for hours.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening, this is her first time on the air, this is her first time doing any kind of podcast radio show, and I'm really excited to have her because she's very opinionated, she's very outspoken when she's talking on the different issues when it comes to her social media, and I really enjoy having conversations with her. So our guest this evening is Brittany Lewis. She is a 34-year-old mother of three boys, Jeremiah, 16, Brandon, 14, and Logan, 10, currently residing in Newark, New Jersey, but Brittany is a Detroit native. Recently, she landed her dream career position as a human resources manager for a company that has been around for over 100 years. Enrolled at William Peterson University, Brittany is currently pursuing a master's degree in human resources management, and you can say that she loves all things HR related. Brittany, thank you so much for taking the time out of your life. I mean, three grown boys in the double digits. That's not an easy task. So, you know, really appreciate that you're taking the time out to be here with us and to chat with us this evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and thank you for having me. I truly appreciate being on your show. I'm excited. Let's get into it. Yeah,
we met online about, I want to say, 6 years ago now, 2016. Maybe a little bit after that. And I always love your posts because you're very opinionated. If something comes up, like you would do like a 30 story post about the same thing, and the story just continues. You're very opinionated. You talk about body image issues. You talk about blackness. You talk about dealing with white people at the workplace. Like the topics that you cover in your work, and I think you just do it from a genuine place of like, this is something that's affecting me, I'm going to talk about it, which I find to be very authentic, very beautiful to hear those perspectives.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm like, I want to talk to you, because you know, and I know that you're in HR, and you've spoken about the fact that we need more black representation in HR, in the HR position as well.
Absolutely.
So that's why I wanted to have you on the show.
Absolutely.
But before we get to that, we're coming out of, in the States, you're based in the States, so it's a little bit different from my understanding, is that the pandemic feels like it's done in the States.
Yes. Absolutely. Nobody cares. They're getting rid of masks. There are so many places that I go inside and I'm like, so we're done with masks. The pandemic is over with. People no longer care. They feel like they want their lives back. And if they're willing to risk getting sick, and they feel like if it's their time to go, it's their time to go. And it's really nothing that they can do beyond that. So they're going to enjoy while they're here.
Exactly.
And I received that perspective, but stay away from me though. Keep your distance.
Gotcha.
And then stay at home if you're sick, because I've seen a lot of people do that. Me and my boys went to see Jujutsu Kaisen, and this woman was coughing and blowing her nose, and it made me very uncomfortable because I feel like we're closed in a tight space. If you weren't feeling well, even if it's not COVID related, you stay at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's the climate we're in today.
I agree 100%. Because even before the pandemic, when I was working in an office, like around January is cold and flu season here in Montreal, and my bosses would get really sick. I had the general manager of the business and the artistic director, and they would constantly get really sick because it was also high pressure in our season at Black Theater Workshop. And because we had have our biggest fundraiser was happening in late January, early February, and it would be it would be just hacking and coughing behind us, and invariably the entire office would get sick. Now I'm just like, we got Zoom, y'all. If I'm ever in a small office environment like that again, I'll be like, if you sick, stay home, connect through the server, and, you know, you need access to the files, connect that through the server, because, come on, we don't need to be getting everybody sick.
And what I will say is a lot of companies actually did care at the beginning. Like, back in 2020, they were saying, oh, if you're sick, stay home. Yeah. Now they don't care. For them, it's back to production. And if you're sick, put a mask on and get back to work. And it's like, That doesn't really help company morale. That doesn't help employees that feel like, hey, I feel like it would be better if I stayed home because that would be best on my body. But then you just have reckless people mm-hmm. who are out and they know that they're sick and they don't care because, again, it's like, who cares? If you get sick, you get sick. And if you don't, you don't. It's like a Hunger Games kind of thing. Like, your immune system, if you're healthy enough, then okay. And if you're not, oh well.
May the odds forever be in your favor.
In your favor.
Yes. So how was the last 2 years for you? I mean, you also speak a lot about mental health in your posts.
Yeah.
And you and I have talked, and you've told me that you deal with anxiety, depression, and stuff like that. How did the onset, at least in the beginning, when it was like really intense, how did that affect you and your family living as well?
So what I will say is, unlike many people, at the start of the pandemic, when we went fully remote, I was loving it. I have anxiety, so just knowing that my children were home, I can ensure that they're getting the lessons. I'm working remote. Everybody's safe. I feel good about this. It wasn't until the start of the school year for September 2020 that I was like, okay, this is a lot. It's overwhelming. The expectation that you're supposed to be able to work a full-time schedule while also ensuring that three children are getting all of their work during the day, mm-hmm. Getting their homework in. I just felt like the school should have shifted from giving so much homework and realizing that, hey, maybe schoolwork is enough. Children are adjusting to being home full time. Mm-hmm. Their socialization skills have dwindled down to essentially nothing.
Right.
And we're putting a lot of pressure on them, as well as just me just trying to navigate not getting outside time. So for me, in order for me to just feel like I could breathe and be in a good headspace, I would book random hotels around New Jersey and call that self-care. I would try a new restaurant, not going in the restaurant, but ordering the food, going to pick it up and enjoying it in my room while watching TV. That gave me a break. I will say last year, around August 2021, up until March of this year, has been like, it was really rough. It was really, really difficult. I have three boys, as we previously mentioned, and their father just, I guess he decided that he wanted to make life difficult for me. He stopped really helping with getting clothes and things like that. So it made things really difficult because I was not working. So I went into credit card debt, just trying to navigate being a mother and ensuring that my children had everything that they needed.
Right.
Because that's what moms do, right? When there's not a way, you make a way. Mm-hmm. So I just found myself just really stressed out, crying a lot. There were days that I would just lay in bed and just cry until it was time to pick up the boys. And then, you know, you got to use that extra little bit of energy that you have to be a mom and to cook and then to help with homework. And then, you know, try to go to sleep so that you can get yourself together. Yeah, but then I would also find when I was deep in my depression or like when I had really bad anxiety, my sleeping was off. So I would be getting like 1 and 2 hours of sleep at night and then sometimes no sleep at all.
Right.
So that would add to me being very irritable, being sad, just being totally out of it. I don't know if it was the warm weather that kind of got me out of it or the fact that their father moved to Texas and then it was just officially me just doing everything on my own, which kind of gave me the confidence to know that I can do it and I don't need help and I don't have to ask for things. I can navigate life and I'll be just fine and my boys will be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And so what are some things that you do to navigate, to mitigate your anxiety?
So
aside from like booking a hotel and like taking time for yourself and stuff like that.
Honestly, I've not really found any good techniques that stick. So okay. I've tried the breathing. I've tried the getting up and going for a walk. I've tried getting in the shower, turning on cold water. But it's one of those things that I just have to let play out. I try to listen to my body as much as I can when it's speaking to me because it does give me warning signs before an anxiety attack or a panic attack occurs.
Oh, yeah.
Slowdown. Yeah, it usually starts when I can't sleep. Like the hours that I've never received a full night's sleep as an adult. So I'll say that. Like I don't get 8 hours of sleep, right? But 6 hours. That's a nice sleep for me. But when it's dwindling from 6 to 5:30, then going from 5:30 to 4:30, that makes me more anxious because each night I'm waiting for that hour to reduce, like for more time for me to be awake with my thoughts and to be stressed out or to be, you know, out of it. And then I know what the next day is going to entail because I have allowed myself to think about all of those things and how I'm going to be tired in the morning and how I'm not going to be able to give my best and things like that. So I say those are the moments that maybe I should be talking to a therapist or maybe I should be trying to get some medicine in my system. But I grew up in a community where they, you know, shun that the mental health aspects of going and talking to somebody and going to get help because you can just pray that away. You know, if you give it to God, then everything's going to be okay.
And you know, I think about that often, right? And I think about, like, there's a story of the man who's in a sinking boat, right? And a first boat comes and says, "Hey, yo, do you need some help?" And he's like, "No, God's got me. I'm fine. Don't worry about it. Just keep going." A second boat comes, and now the boat is like halfway into the water. And they're like, "You need some help? Like, can we help you? Like, your boat's going down." He's like, no, I'm fine. God's got me." And now, like, the guy's up to his neck in water. The boat's completely submerged, just like the mast is still out. And a third boat comes and he's like, "Yo, you need some help? Like, we could take you on." And the guy's like, "No, God's got me." Guy drowns, goes to heaven, and he finally goes in front of God. He's like, yo, God, what happened? You, like, my boat was going down. I was praying to you and everything. And God said to him, well, I sent 3 boats to come and get you. And you just said no. And to me, it's like, yeah, prayer will take you to a certain level. But at the other level, it's like, I believe that people come into your life, things come into your life, information, because I spoke to another guest recently, and she was like, we're in the almost the peak of the information age, whereby literally you could be on your Instagram scrolling and a quote comes up that matches exactly what you're going through. You know, all of that information comes to you, and, you know, to just believe that a physical entity that we call God is going to come and stand up in front of you and say, this is the solution, is unrealistic to me. I find people who preach this, oh, just say a prayer and you'll be fine type of mentality, to be detrimental, because it's not a, yes, pray, meditate, focus, etc., but also do, take action, you know, because, you know, like, what will happen is you'll get the inspiration to do something, but if you don't take action from there, you might as well just stay wherever you are and don't even bother to pray.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have just tuned in, we are speaking to Brittany Lewis, who is based in Newark, New Jersey, but she's a Detroit native, a mother of 3 boys, enrolled in William Patterson University, currently pursuing a master's degree in human resources management. We are speaking to her, but we got to take a quick break because we got to play some music and pay some bills. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
I will be one of the greatest, that is a vow, yeah, that is a promise. Always wanted to be famous, just being real, yeah, just being honest. My haters won't always be nameless, give them no clout, I give them no power. Creators built different than ancient, sooner than later, I will be ours. I keep an eye out for the numbers, I stay in contact, synchronization. To infinity, even beyond it, I am a common, no destination. A lot of things I am above, and there are a lot of things that are above me. Do not come for the people I love, cause then I get scary, then I get uglier.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is a 34-year-old mother of 3 boys, Jeremiah, Brandon, and Logan, all 16, 14, and 10 each, in that order. Her name is Brittany Lewis. She's currently residing in Newark, New Jersey, but she's originally a Detroit native. Brittany, your eldest is 16 years old.
Yes.
And you're currently 34, which means that he's about to turn 17 soon, very soon.
Yes.
So you are a young mom. Okay?
Yes.
And you're in Detroit.
Yes.
Detroit, which is like just globally known as a very violent space, a very violent area, especially when it comes to the Black community.
Yes.
I hate that that's the truth, but brass tacks is brass tacks. Can't call it anything else. What was that like? What were you going through mentally? And I also know that you grew up in a very religious home. at the time.
Yes.
So what was that like for you? What was that experience like?
Well, when I got pregnant, I was filled with fear, naturally, just because I was 17. I knew that that was going to be something that disappointed my parents, and I wasn't sure what would come from letting them know that. When I told my mom that I was pregnant, she was extremely supportive. So was all of my family. Having said that, the members of the church were not very appreciative of the fact that I was pregnant, and they thought that it would be best if the men in the church, so it was about 6 or 7 of them, came over and talked to me.
Wow.
And they came over to tell me that when I graduated from high school, they did not think that it would be smart for me to relocate to Newark, New Jersey, to be with the father of my child, because he lived in New Jersey. I didn't give this part of the story, but we actually met on social media when I was 13.
Oh, wow.
And from 13 to 16, we talked through social media, on the phone. And then when I was 16, I did sneak out there to New Jersey to visit him, followed by him coming to visit me, which prompted me getting pregnant. So that's the backstory with that. So they just came over. They told me that I was making a terrible choice. He's not going to want me. My life is going to be much harder if I go be with the father of my child, and that I should essentially listen to them.
Right.
And I'm headstrong. I was always raised to follow my heart. That's what my father always taught me. You follow your heart, from that there will come either a blessing or a lesson. And then from that lesson, you grow as a person, and you know, you lick your wounds, and then you go on with life.
Mm.
So for me, it wasn't a matter of he's going to hurt me or he's going to break my heart. It was, I'm in love with this person. We are having a child, and I don't want to be in Detroit. I didn't want to be in Detroit because of crime and me worried that something could potentially happen to my child.
Right.
Because I faced that same issue if, you know, in living in New Jersey or living anywhere in the United States.
Right.
I just had a difficult childhood, and I just wanted to put distance from the things that made me sad and that made me that didn't make me feel like my best self, if that
right.
makes sense. So I put the distance. When I found out I was pregnant, I extremely applied myself to high school. I graduated in January, and I had my son, and I relocated to New Jersey, and the rest was history with that.
Right.
I did get pregnant 2 years later with my son Brandon, and then I ended up getting married, and then I had Logan a few years later. I will say living in New Jersey is more expensive than being in Michigan. So mm-hmm. in my 20s, after the kids were, you know, at that age where you just want them to have that front yard and that backyard and be able to play safely,
yeah.
I did make the choice to move back to Michigan. And we did reside in Michigan for several years before I switched my career from working as a teacher to going back to school for business administration, because I did work as a preschool teacher. And then I was like, you know, I love children, but it's not paying me what I want to be making. So
right.
I'm going to go back to college. I went back to college. I got my associate's degree. And then that's when I landed my first position in human resources. And that's where I realized I loved human resources. And then I realized, there's money to be made in New Jersey and the New York area. So I came back out here with the boys, and we've been out here ever since. But I will say, as they get older, it does scare me, just because I have 3 black boys.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime there's a story that occurs now, what I do want to say, and I want to make this very clear, because I do find a lot of people always put the focal point on black boys and black men, black girls and black women. They can face that same fate when they walk out the door. So if
yeah.
I would have had a black daughter, that would be my same fear. You can walk outside and the police could ensure that you don't make it home.
Yeah.
So
and then
for
there's
me,
the added part of like
yes.
the majority of kidnappings will happen to girls as opposed to boys.
So yeah,
girls
I try to always
often and stuff like that.
I try to always say this just because I think it gives people a lot of perspective, but 60% of girls under the age of 18, Black girls under the age of 18, are sexually assaulted. So I will say that again, 60% of Black girls under the age of 18 are sexually assaulted. That matters to me because I, as a child, I saw me go from being a child to adults, adult men more specifically, to being viewed as consumption by them. So that would definitely be a fear of mine if I had a daughter. If she's outside and she's going to catch the bus, is she going to be harassed? Because I had to deal with something like that. If she's outside and she's walking to the store, will someone pull up to her? And then she goes from, hey, beautiful, to, okay, then, F you then, you know, B-I-T-C-H, that mm-hmm. type of thing. Because it can go from politeness to aggression to murder very quickly, because that's what we deal with. But on the flip side, with Black boys, it's you worry when they're going out the door and you're not picking them up from school because you see how police over police Black children, more specifically Black boys. And so it's like, how am I going to combat that? The ways that I combat that is I drop them off at school. I do my best to pick them up from school. If I can't get them right then my mother will come in. She will pick them up. But I just try to keep them, and I know this is unrealistic right now, but I try to keep them as sheltered as possible. And maybe that will come back to bite me in my behind later on. Mm-hmm. But I'd rather know that I'm picking them up, they're getting home safe, then them catching a bus, and then they get downtown to where it's a lot of children and a lot of people, and then the police come and harass people, and then, you know, something could possibly happen. Or, because it's not just police, right? You also have Black men and Black boys who are extra aggressive with other Black boys and Black men. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you could come out your house and you have nothing to live for. But here's my son who's focused in school and he has college to look at, like to look forward to. And you guys don't have the same fate. Not because you can't be doing the same thing, but because you're making a life choice. Maybe it's because you don't have parents that care. You don't have people in your life that's pushing you. Because I will say, I was talking to my boys. They had midterms and they were telling me that, this is a while ago, so I apologize, but they were telling me that there were kids in their class that had been locked up before. Wow. And I'm like, what?
Locked up like in jail?
My son was in ninth grade. My son, Brandon, was in ninth grade. He was saying that this boy was sitting there during the time that they were taking their midterms, and the boy was just not doing anything. And he pulled up his grades, and he had all Fs. And I was like, well, how did he have all Fs? And he was like, well, he had just come back from being locked up in juvenile for stealing cars. And I was like, that's really sad. So then it propelled me to ask my oldest, hey, are you in class with anybody that's been locked up before? And he'd been in class with some people that have been locked up before. And I'm like, I'm glad that that's not your reality. I'm glad that as a child, you just have the luxury of being a child, and you don't have that extra weighted pressure of trying to be an adult when you don't have the mindset for that. So that fast living for young boys that eventually go on to be, you know, adult Black men, that creates a space for aggression and violence. And it's sad. I wish we could figure out a way to navigate so that we don't lose so many children to, you know, the system or to gangs and things like that. Because, you know, yes, their families should care. But what I will say, it's a beautiful thing with the school that my boys are in now, and it took some finding, is they have teachers that actually care. Like, I know, and this is great, because my son got assigned to his guidance counselor. This is his guidance counselor, and so he's done with this school.
Yeah.
So we're not switching. We have a dynamic parent-teacher partnership. If he's slacking in anything, she's calling my phone, texting my phone. And I just feel like those things matter. We're working together to ensure that he knows you care, I care, and we're going to work to get him wherever he wants to go.
Right.
So I just feel like all children should have that. And they're in a school where it's a college preparatory school, and you have the guidance aspect from the people that actually care. Like, you have Black teachers, you have Black men. Because for me, and this is just me rambling, and I apologize for this.
Don't apologize. We got time.
Grade, I was in sixth grade when I had my first Black male teacher.
Right.
My son was in seventh grade when he had his first Black male teacher. And my other son was in ninth grade. I think that that says a lot, but I always made sure I told them to appreciate what you have, because that changes the dynamic. Like, it's nothing to have a Black woman that's a teacher that cares about you, right?
Because
we've all had them, and we've all had a plethora of them. And that's not taking away from them being dynamic at what they do.
Yeah.
But having a Black man to show up for a Black boy and provide him guidance. Like my son Brandon, I'm finding that he has anxiety. So when we moved back out here from Michigan in 2019, he had difficulty adjusting to school. Mm-hmm. And the teachers that were calling and concerned with him and concerned about his behavior and concerned about him being withdrawn from school were Black men. And for me, that mattered a lot. Like, they kept saying, we got him, we got his back, we're going to ensure that he's on track, that he knows that we care, he knows that he's safe here. And for me, it was like, I'm not used to Black men outside of my boy's family showing up for them in that way.
Right.
And I think that if more Black boys had Black men that, hey, I'm not in your family, but I see you, I want you to win, and I'm going to work with you, whatever I can do. What can I do? Because they were asking those questions, right?
Yeah.
Like, they saw that he didn't feel comfortable speaking out and saying things. So they're like, how can we help you? Just let us know what you need from us.
Yeah.
And it didn't stop over the course of like a week or two. No, they worked with him until he got better with it and he adjusted. And it took like 3 to 6 months. And so for me, I just felt like,
yeah,
you know, that type of dynamic speaks volumes. Like, they'll definitely be able to look back and that'll be a pivotal moment in their lives once they're able to, you know, plug that stuff in their adults, and they can process all of those things. So I think that that's really awesome.
That's interesting, because I was listening to a podcast of a guest that we actually had on here back in January, the Teach Reach podcast. And one of the things that the guest was saying is that because the guest had, I don't recall precisely, but the guest deals with like therapy and healing and stuff like that. And one of the things that he was saying is that if I, as your therapist, have not experienced the same kind of trauma as you, I can't help you to heal. And I found that to be very interesting, because I think about, my therapist, my mental health therapist, and I'm like, I feel like that's why we gel, because a lot of my experiences she can relate to on a level, even though she's a woman and I'm a man, and we navigate the world very differently. There's a lot of intersecting points, and I've been to like white therapists and stuff like that, and like, I always felt like a disconnect, like, you're not getting what I'm saying, you're not getting how I'm feeling.
Yes.
For a reason. Like, I walk the world in a very different way. And I think about what you're saying in terms of your boys with a Black male teacher and their involvement. I mean, I've been in that kind of teaching position before. It wasn't an official teaching, but it was more like I was tutoring and stuff like that. And I was able to, there were some boys that I was able to connect with and have very real conversations with, that I think because there was a shared experience, like we were both, I remember very clearly, we were both immigrants. Me, I'm technically not an immigrant, because I was technically born in Canada, but I was raised for the first 20 years of my life outside of Canada. So for me, I'm technically an immigrant. I have that kind of lifestyle. And I was able to have some really real conversations with him. And years later, he came back to me and he was like, yo, when you were talking to me about this, this, and this, this is how it actually impacted my life. And I was just thinking, like, how come there is a stigma that I have seen about Black male teachers, there's like, especially for like, even as you get to the younger ages, like when you're talking about taking care of toddlers and I don't know what they call it, the pre-kindergarten kids. Like there's this,
pre-K.
Yeah, there's the stigma up until like 4 years old of like men should not be in those teacher positions. And there's like a
I always loved when I saw the men in the, when I worked in a daycare, when I saw men, because there were two that worked there, they were dynamic at what they did. They were always very jovial. They always could get the kids to fall in line and listen. And I know that dynamic isn't respected, or I want, maybe respected is not the right word. I know that dynamic isn't the norm in society, but I do feel like that it should be.
And I wonder why is it why isn't it the norm? Why isn't it accepted that
Western
a man
society
can come and take care of children, be in
Western
a
society? I really, truly feel like white men not valuing their women and them putting it in a place where you raise the children, and that not being viewed as equal to going and working, which it's actually more important. Like no position that I ever work will be more important than what I do as a parent. So I can't compare two things that are not comparable, you know?
Right.
But oftentimes that's what the dynamic is. You're faced with either being a stay-at-home parent or a parent and that's in the workforce. And I feel like a lot of that was put on, oh, the woman is the one that stays home and she teaches that. And then when we started to create a marketing society, like marketing and things like that, then it just, that's how things just started getting marketed as. We're marketing women as the ones that, and it, because it goes back to patriarchy, women couldn't vote, women couldn't do all of these things. They had to be married to have their name on a bank account. If they could even do that, they couldn't go to school. So what else were you going to do? You're going to stay home, you're going to raise your children. You're going to stay home, you're going to teach the kids. And then when they were old enough, you're going to send them off to school. But the teachers were women.
Yeah.
I think that men that find it important to go to school and become teachers, we should really ask them, like, what made you, especially Black men, what made you want to be a teacher?
That is,
and what age were you when you had your first Black man as a teacher? And is that the person that changed your course and that dynamic that made you want to reach another group of Black children?
Yeah. And you know, when my son was still in the 1 year old, 2 year old range, he was at a daycare in which there was a Black male who was taking care. I think he was taking care of one of the quote unquote older groups, because it's the, I think if I'm not mistaken, daycare is from 0 to 4 or 0 to 5. So maybe he was taking care of like maybe the 3 or the 4 year olds. Which to me is like, the only difference is that they're walking and running around, but you still have to make sure, you still have to take them to the bathroom, you probably have to change their diaper, you know, you still have to do all of the basic things, like, across the board. And I never, in my mind, I was looking at him, I was very happy that he was there. Sometimes he would take care of my son's group, so he would come and talk to me and tell me about whatever it is, like tell me about his personality and whatever stuff that I wouldn't see because I didn't have my son full time. And I never felt like, oh, this guy shouldn't be here because he's a man. And I've seen people talk about like how sketchy it is, and like I don't understand it. Like wanting to take care of children doesn't make you a pedophile. Like, that's not...
And I would say people that have those type of mindsets are the people that I would be worried about, because when you look at a situation that is extremely innocent and, like, a man teaching children to me is natural. So my mind wouldn't inherently take me to something negative or nasty or perverted. So I always say, just like with people that look at little girls and they like to sexualize them, well, what your mind takes you to when you see a child says more about you than it does about that child or that parent, regardless to if you feel like as a parent, they should be doing something different. That still says something about you sexualizing a child.
Yes.
And that's what's not okay.
Yeah, it's your mindset. It's your mindset that's seeing that image, as opposed to like, that's just, they are a child. And if you're having these thoughts, then you need to go to therapy and figure that out.
Which is why I watched this show called Abbott Elementary. A black woman wrote it. She has two men in there that are teachers. And I'm like, a black man and a white guy. And mm-hmm. I think that, again, that is a normal dynamic. And we need to start incorporating that in the media, because I feel like the media does a disservice to a lot of things based off of how they present things.
That's a show with Quinta Brunson.
Yes.
Yeah, the, what's her name?
Yes.
I Ain't Never Been on a Good Date. That's how she started off. She's never been on a good date.
I love her. I love her.
Yes.
I'm so excited for season two. I can't wait for that to come out.
One of the things I love about social media is we're able to follow the careers of certain people who, like, literally they started off doing vines. A lot of these, like, Quinta Brunson, her Never Been on a Good Date videos were vines before.
Remember that six-second video. Vines. That's the thing that, like, it makes me feel old. And I don't know why it makes me feel old.
But that was only 2012, 2013.
Well, yeah, to see someone come from that to... Because before this, before her writing Abbott Elementary, she was on this HBO show. It was like a black woman comedy sketch thing, and it was hilarious.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
but before that, she was on BuzzFeed. She was doing those little BuzzFeed videos.
I'm here for it. So just to see her growth in that aspect is like, that's really dynamic. It kind of reminds me of Issa Rae, how Issa Rae came from doing Misadventures on YouTube to her book to how far she's come now. It's really inspiring. I am a half-ass poet, meaning I write sometimes. I need to get back into not only writing poetry, but I would really love to actually start writing screenplays. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's really dynamic when I see black women on their grind and to see them start at that bottom and know that if it's possible for them and they created a way, you can do that too.
Absolutely.
So that's awesome.
Absolutely. Just in case you're joining us for the first time this evening, we are speaking to Brittany Lewis, who is a 34-year-old mother of three, recently landed her dream career as a human resources manager, is currently, as long as I've known Brittany, she's always been in school, and that's been like, it feels like it's been like she's been in school forever. She's always telling me about what degree she's about to get and she's about to graduate and which degree she's... And I'm just like, bro, what are you going to do with 100 degrees? But she's currently pursuing a master's degree in human resources manager. We do have to take a quick break and play some music. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Luke and D. Real food you want, come to Mango Bay every day.
Real food. Mango Bay Restaurant, located in the heart of downtown Montreal, 1236 Mackay Street, Suite 201. For reservations, please call 514-875-7082 or visit mangobay.ca. Real food.
Let's get together and feed.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest is Brittany Lewis, 34-year-old mother of three boys, currently residing in New York, but originally a Detroit native, recently landed her dream career as a human resources manager, currently enrolled in William Patterson University, pursuing her master's degree in human resources management. Brittany, thank you for being here. It's a pleasure to have you. I love having dynamic conversations, because we need to talk to people from all walks of life, and I'm very happy that you're here. No, I am like confused because ever since I met you, I've known you to be in like business and human resources, and like you just kind of like threw me for a loop where you're like, oh, you used to teach. So like, tell us a little bit about why you decided to go into teaching, and then what made you decide to like, okay, teaching, me no want that, as Jamaicans would say anymore, and you moved into business.
Okay, well, for me, I have three boys, and I was a stay-at-home mom until the boys were old enough to get back into school. So for me, I began looking for positions, and the jobs that I found, I always found myself having to compromise a lot in space of my children. So it would lead to me feeling like I'm either not getting enough time with them, or I'm going to potentially lose the job because here's a half a day, here's this that came up. So I said, hey, if I start working in a daycare or a school setting, then the half a days will be the same. The vacations will be the same. And I'll be home in enough time to cook dinner for my children, to give them that time and that energy. And so it just was a smart life choice for me in that moment. And also, I love children. I've always loved children. I have a huge family. And anytime someone had a new baby, I'm like, oh, my gosh, my baby. But so, yeah.
Yeah.
I filled out for it, became a toddler teacher. I love children. They're awesome. They're some of my favorite humans, just because if you want the truth, if you want a funny conversation, if you want some perspective, you're going to get it, even if you don't ask for it. And they teach you just as much as you come in there to teach them. So it was fun. In the days that, you know, they were challenging, you find a way to navigate that. Like you were saying, that you would find a way to work with kids and you could relate to them. For me, I always was drawn to the children that were a bit of a challenge.
Okay.
The ones that had those behavioral issues, just because growing up for me, I had those behavioral issues and I saw how easy it was for teachers to just write them off. Mm-hmm. So I always referenced this one little Black boy who had a difficult time in the toddler class. He did not like to nap. Did not like anybody sitting next to him to try to get him down for a nap. So I made it my mission to bridge that gap.
Okay.
I want to know what's going on in that head of yours. I want to know why you react this way, why you kick kids, why you hit them. I want to know these things. I want you to know this is a safe space. Even if other teachers haven't created it for you, I'm going to. And let's see what that relationship looks like.
Okay.
And it took a little bit of time, right? It took like a month or two. But I was able to sit right beside him and rub his back and get him to sleep. And I feel like, and just him knowing I'm not going to give up on you. I don't care how long it takes for those walls to fall down. Mm-hmm. I'm here for that day that when they do fall down, so I can actually get a chance to meet the real you.
Yeah.
Because this is not you. This is your protective shell, right? So when I was able to actually get those walls down, I saw a happy kid. I saw a kid that was shell-shocked because his family just moved from one state to another state. He missed his friends. He missed his family. He did not go to daycare prior to. So all of it was an adjustment for him.
Right.
And getting to that point and then getting him to trust me, it was very rewarding for me. Like, that was an incentive for me. That made me feel like I'm doing my job because the pay sucked, right? So just
which doesn't just make knowing, any sense to me. It never it made any sense to me. Like, why are teachers getting paid so close to minimum wage? Like, it's ridiculous.
I mean, the same can be said for human resources individuals as well. And human resources is the heart of any organization. If you have ever had a toxic work environment, human resources is at the brunt of that. Like, they are the forefront and they are the reason why a workplace culture is toxic. So I just feel like across the board, everyone needs to be paid livable wages. If inflation can rise, so can people's salaries and so can minimum wage, because in New Jersey, minimum wage is $12.
What?
The cost for rent, a one bedroom, is over $1,200. How is one supposed to survive How is one supposed to survive?
You would have to work 100 hours.
I'm looking for apartments now, and there's this apartment that I absolutely love. Like, I love the look of it. I love the location of it. But I cannot, something in me can't justify paying 1 month's rent, which is $1,900, 1 month's security, which is $1,900, and then a $1,900 broker's fee. Why am I paying a $1,900 broker's fee?
Why are you paying
$6,000? It's so disgusting. Yeah.
We don't have that.
So the total is like $6,600 and something dollars is what they want someone to pay to move into an apartment. Not a home.
We don't have that. We don't do that in Canada.
We pay first month. I'm about to
move to Canada. Ellie,
I'm about to move to Canada.
We pay first month and every month consequential on the first of the month or whatever arrangement you have with the landlord.
Yeah, I wish it was like that because I feel like it's, you're just price gouging me. And then I also feel like it, like people are just, I don't know, but I can't justify it. So I'm still looking. I mean, if I can't find anything, then eventually I will, you know, suck it up and just pay the fee. But I begrudgingly don't want to pay it.
Right.
I don't. Right. I feel cheated.
And so, okay, so you were a toddler teacher.
Oh, and
teacher.
I'm sorry, we totally veered off.
It's fine.
With,
it's fine.
Being a teacher.
Stop apologizing, so, yeah. Ma'am. you're a toddler teacher, and then you did pre-K?
Yes. So as a toddler teacher, this was when I was living in New Jersey.
Okay.
And then when I decided, hey, guys, I want you guys to have a front yard, a backyard. The cost of living in Michigan is cheaper. Let's go back out there. Relocated. Started working at a sister company of the daycare that I worked with out here. And then I was working as a preschool teacher. I had a 1-to-10 ratio, and I found, again, I love to, again, bridge that gap. So I found more children that were, and this is what teachers deem these children as, just because you've had a little bit of an issue. But I see that stigma can follow that child. Mm-hmm. So there was this kid in particular. He just was just always bouncing around, always a little mouthy. And he didn't listen to you if he didn't want to listen to you.
Yeah.
And they would say that he was troubled. He was bad. And I was like, I don't like those terms. Just because he's not doing what you want him to do doesn't mean that he's bad.
Right.
And then if you say those things, one, and he can hear you, it kind of
determines
how he treats you and how he behaves with you.
Yeah.
As you can see, your behavior and how you, like, your energy towards him is mm-hmm. what he's playing off of. He's a child. He knows that you don't want to be bothered with him, so I would probably annoy you as well. So I just found that way to bridge that gap, and I will say that I loved doing it, even though the pay sucked. For me, what was a defining moment for me that I just knew that I couldn't, one, I could no longer work with this company, but that I was just going to go follow my career path, that I wanted something more with more money, was the particular child that I'm referring to. Again, he had a lot of energy. So he would be, you know, he wanted to do what he wanted to do. The TA in the classroom got really frustrated and she pushed him on the floor.
Wow.
He stood up and she pushed him again. And in the amount of time that I saw the first one, I'm putting this child down that I'm tending to, and I'm running over to pick up Reed because I'm shocked. I'm in a state of shock. I'm trying to hold back tears because I'm like mama bear. These are like my kids, and I feel like I have to protect them. And what are you doing? So I grabbed him, told him, you are okay. You did nothing wrong. I'm so sorry that she made you feel that way. We're going to get to the bottom of this. I called to have someone come in and relieve her because she needs to leave the room.
Mm-hmm.
We actually both need to leave the room because now I need to go talk to the directors about what happened.
Yeah.
And I go tell the director, the assistant director, and they call the regional manager because now this is a big issue. And this is a company that is all over the world, not just this daycare company. It's not just in the States, but they have places all over the world.
Interesting.
So,
okay.
I'm expecting them to not only fire her, but launch a thorough investigation, run back the tapes, contact the parents, because this is what I would have expected you to do for my child if this happened to my child.
Right.
No. So Reed went home and told his mother that he was pushed.
Yeah.
And I just so happened to be going to the restroom the next day. And before I could reach the restroom, I mean, because the regional manager came that day and didn't leave until I quit. She was still there. But I hear the regional manager, which you should never take business calls in the hallway, like the front desk reception area. You should never take calls in there. But the mother called up and was like, so Reed told me that a teacher pushed him and that Miss Brittany saw it. And I don't know if she didn't want to call the child a liar, but she was like, yeah, so we investigated that. And it was determined that Miss Brittany was lying when she said that. And maybe Reed overheard her saying that. And so that's why he came home and said that. And I just walked up so that she could see me, tears running down my face, because I feel like the way for you guys to mitigate risk was throwing me under the bus to say that I was lying.
Wow.
Even though you're not explaining why the other teacher is no longer here, because she quit. So she didn't have to come back and possibly get fired. She would have gotten fired. And by law, what we should have done was contact the authorities and she should have been arrested.
Right. Because that's assault.
Right. And then also we were supposed to launch an investigation, but they didn't want negative press for the company. So it was easier for them to say I was lying.
Right.
And the mother of the child looked at me like crazy after that, because I filled out an incident report. I gave it to her. So it was like, I'm lying. And I didn't like that feeling. I didn't feel comfortable there. I didn't feel like I could be a teacher to the kids anymore. And I had to go. My body was telling me it's time to go. So I worked till the end of the week and I said, I can't do this anymore. And I quit. Yeah. And I quit.
And so how, because you made mention of like how human resources were supposed to work. Was that a bit of the inspiration for you to like,
No,
not even.
No, that wasn't an inspiration. So when I went into, when I started school, I wasn't even sure what I wanted to do. That's right. Why I had a general degree in business administration. I wasn't sure. I didn't know. But I had to do an externship in order to graduate. And so my mom works as a injury compensation specialist within the Human Resources Department of the United States Postal Service.
Okay.
And I did an internship, an externship with her. And then that was where I did like all of the administrative stuff. And I was like, okay, I like, you know, the office feel. I'm here for it.
Okay.
But I posted I started looking for contract positions and I landed a human resources assistant position with Alliance RX Walgreens Prime, which is a specialty drug facility for like oncology medicine and things like that. And that is where I learned that human resources was meant for me. This department is for me. I am big on people. I'm empathetic. If there is a problem, I try to find a viable solution. Actually, I try to find more than one viable solution. I am solution-based. I don't run from overwhelming, challenging obstacles. I find that thing to be fun. So there, I have my own office, which was like, yes, this is something that I'm not used to. Mm-hmm. And people would come in and then they would just tell me their issues that they were having. And just to be able to be a listening ear to help them with issues, like to provide employee assistance program, to get them set up with a different shift schedule because they weren't thriving on this one. But just to see, like, here, I'm here to help you be successful in this role.
Mm-hmm.
That was special for me. But then when that contract ended, I started working with the recruiter that I would help fill roles, the customer service roles that they had there. I landed a position with American Express as a recruitment coordinator. And there is where I realized that I find it rewarding to help people find positions. It changes their lives, right?
Right.
So when you source a candidate and you're like, I think you would be perfect for this role. And then you present that candidate to a hiring manager and the hiring manager is like, let's go forth with the interview. And that first interview goes well. So you schedule the second one. And then that second one goes good. So you schedule the final interview. And then they knock that one out the ball. And then you can just present them with the offer letter that is going to change their life. That's rewarding for me. But I will say, after I did the onboarding, it stopped because I was a recruitment coordinator. So yeah. Once I got you onboarded, you had your first day, I handed you off. And I didn't like that aspect because if I find you, if I work with you to get the job, I also want to ensure that you're successful within the role. So now I'm in a space where I source the talent, I conduct the interviews, I do the onboarding, and then I do the succession planning with you to ensure that you're successful in this role and to let you know that I'm going to be here to create a culture where you feel comfortable coming to work and being your most creative and productive self. And I'm going to be here to help you anytime an issue comes up. Like right now, there's a person at the facility that I work with. He's having mental health issues. So okay. For me, it was, let me reach out to our insurance provider and see if we have employee assistance program. And then what other tools do we have? We have an app where you can go on and they will find you therapists. You can try 3 free therapists. And we also have a fitness app where they will pay a portion of your gym membership and things like that. So it's a wellness program and just giving him those tools to ensure like, hey, I'm going to be checking in with you. You're not alone in this. You may feel like you're alone with it at home, but here you're not.
Yeah.
How can we help you? So like just being that for people, I feel like it's rewarding for me. Even when the pay is not what it should be, it's still rewarding. So I enjoy going to work.
That's interesting that you say even if the pay is not as rewarding, the service that you're providing is as rewarding. And I'm kind of that mentality whereby I'm like, I rather work in a job that I come away from it feeling fulfilled as a human being, having been of service to people, whether it is in my performance or in a teaching capacity or whatever the case may be, and I get not the greatest paycheck at the end of the day, still something that I believe, you know, I'll take care of my home, I'll take care of my thing, but like, not like, oh my God, I have all this extra money to do all this extra stuff. I'd rather have that and do that than have like this high paying job in which I don't feel fulfilled, I'm physically exhausted, clashing with coworkers, not happy about what I'm doing. I'd rather take the other one that pays less and that I have a higher enjoyment than the one that pays a whole heap of money. And I know a lot of people get caught in that trap, right?
No, I'd rather take the one that has the more money and then fix the culture of the company.
But you're in the
position. Because I don't mind the challenge.
Right.
And pay me for the work that I'm going to be doing.
But that's your position, is to change the culture. But like,
true. Yeah, I also feel like people do themselves a disservice when they have the mindset that we both have, which is, you know, it's not paying you a lot, but you enjoy it. You're doing yourself a disservice because then you can't enjoy outside of life, outside of work, because you do have those extra pressures. Hey, I can't go on this trip because I didn't make this amount of money. Or hey, I can't get this car even though I need it. Hey, I can't go pay for this because I need this. So I don't feel like people should have to choose between loving your job or getting paid the money. And I feel like there needs to be a way to bridge that gap as well. Like yesterday, I was looking at, I was on state website looking at what career positions should be getting paid. And every position within our organization is getting paid way less than they're supposed to. And that's a problem for me. But my bosses are the CEO, the COO, and the CEO's son. So it's a matter of me building that trust with them so that they trust the perspective that I'm giving them. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to let them know, like, we need to be paying people livable wages. Because if I'm working for a company, and this is just me, maybe other people can swallow their pride and go along with it. If it's not integrity based, I can't do it.
Yeah.
So like as a human resources manager, I need to have full control over hiring going forward, right? And then also we need to implement succession planning so that when we are calling people in here, we're also giving them raises each year. Because you guys are not giving people raises each year. And how do you show or measure your appreciation for someone that's stuck in for all of these years and that comes in when the pay is not that great?
Yeah.
Like we have to bridge that gap, and I feel like more companies need to be in that mindset and in that mind frame that like maybe you pay yourself a little bit less and then give to your employees more, because that creates an environment where you're more productive, people are more creative, and that thrives in the culture of the company.
Yeah, I like that perspective. I'm gonna start rewiring some things in my brains.
I feel like Black people are the only people that will take less money because they feel like the company or the position is gonna be a good position. No white man. I did an interview this past week. He did not have any education. He did not have any experience. And this man came in and said that he wanted a salary range of $20 to $25 an hour. Because that's what he felt like he deserved to get paid.
Wow.
And I'm not knocking you for that. I'm going to take from that same mindset, and that's what I'm going to do for myself. I'm going to advocate for myself. And I feel like a lot of people don't advocate for themselves. When you're looking for a position, search the salary for that title in your area.
Yeah.
And match it to that salary range. And if it's not within range, you can always let them know I'm interviewing for other positions. Like with this role that I have here, I was interviewing for other positions. They said that they were interviewing other people. So naturally, I'm going to interview. I got a position that was paying a certain amount of money. Actually, what I'm getting paid here, a little bit less than what I'm getting paid here. And then they came back and they said, well, you know, we would love to move forward. And I'm like, well, I can't move forward unless you're going to match this. And not just match it, but I need you to go a little bit over.
Yeah.
That's why it's always nice to have a competing offer. And I learned that from white men that I onboarded.
Interesting.
Yes. With American Express.
I want to ask you another question because... like I said, on your social media platform, you make a point to speak about, you know, the fact that you're in human resources, to speak about that you're making changes at that level, because really and truly, when it comes to people in the workspace, where we hear a lot of complaints about lack of representation and stuff like that, it's HR. Like, yes, at the end of the day, the big bosses have the final decision. But if you as an HR person present 10 people and like 9 out of the 10 people are going to be white and there's only one token Black, then what are the odds that that token Black, even if their qualifications are way above everybody else, the odds are very low that they're going to be chosen. Whereas if you present...
See, that's not the issue that I see. That's not the issue that I see.
Okay.
From my vantage point, I see Black women, not more, because at the level that I do, the level that I source for roles, it's director, analyst, business analyst. So I don't see as many Black men, unfortunately, just because, you know, you need those degrees for that. But I see a lot of Black women, a lot of Asian women. I see them in these roles, but what they're being offered is gross.
Okay, so
they'll have the most education and the most experience. And this is how I can always, this is the best example. While working at this company, Tech Systems, this was right before the pandemic, we were hiring 5 candidates for this company. Mm-hmm. 3 of those candidates were white men. 1 was an Asian woman and 1 was a Black woman.
Right.
The white men had less education and experience than the Asian woman and the Black woman. But the Black woman had more experience and education than all of them.
Right.
She was getting offered $25 an hour. The Asian woman was being offered $55 an hour. And the white men were getting paid $115 an hour. For the same roles. And the person that went to school and that's in more credit card debt and debt, period, because we don't come from homes that have money, right?
Right.
So we have to go into debt to go to college. The people that should be getting paid for it are not getting paid for it. And that's how the system works. And that's how you keep black women down, right? Because you always want to wonder how the high, like, black women lead in education and entrepreneurship, but we're not getting paid for it. And that's why I say more black people need to be within human resources, because we need to tip those scales. The more black people in human resources roles, we're sourcing more black people for these positions, right? And then the higher we move up in ranks, then we can set a salary to meet that. Like, I saw a post on Facebook that was extremely disgusting, because there was this black woman was bragging about lowballing another black woman that came in and didn't know to ask for more during a salary. But this could have been a woman that was, had been out of work, just got out of college, and you're going to take what's offered or what's presented to you because you need a position.
You don't know any better, and you need a position.
Your foot in the door.
Yeah.
And instead of her being like, you know, you are asking for this, but this is the salary range for this role, and I'm going to get you what you deserve. She lowballed her and then got on social media and laughed about it. And what she thought was other people were going to laugh with her. She worked for a company called Honeywell, and she ended up losing her job over that. Because it's like, black people should be working together whenever they can. But I feel like a lot of people, I don't want people to get caught up on the wording, but there are some black people that have elitist attitudes, and they feel like, hey, I want to be above other black people because then that makes me better. Yeah. And it's like, there's space for us all to win.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's enough space for us all to walk through the door.
That is 100% correct. I mean, there would not have been emancipation if it was only one black person that was saying, give me freedom or give me death, you know?
Yeah.
It took a lot of people in order for that to happen, and millions of lives. We do have to take a quick break. Just in case you're tuning in the first time, we are speaking to Brittany Lewis, who is a human resources manager based in Newark, New Jersey. She's a mom of three, and she's currently pursuing yet another degree, a master's degree. I'm always teasing her about this, in human resources management. Keep it locked. You're listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
I can see.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is a human resources manager who just landed that position. That's a dream career position. She's enrolled at William Patterson University, currently pursuing a degree in human resources management. She loves all things HR related. A teacher position where she was teaching toddlers first and then preschool, sorry, and decided, you know what, I need to shift, I need to change into business, and then fell in love with HR. She is a 34-year-old mother of three wonderful boys, Jeremiah, who's 16 years old, Brandon, who's 14, and Logan, who is 10, currently resides in Newark, New Jersey, but is a Detroit native through and through. Brittany Lewis, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Such an interesting, I've known you for over half a decade, and I'm learning brand new things. I'm like, listen, bro, we need to talk more, because I like to
learn things every time we talk.
Yes, so this is our last segment of the evening, and you said during the break that you had some tips for people that they should know about HR. So if you could fire some of them off, because I know you've helped me. I was looking for some jobs and stuff, and you gave me some pretty good tips to help me get through my interview, as well as the same tip that you're about to share with us. So please do.
Well, the first tip when you're looking for a position, match the skills on your resume to the skill sets that they are looking for in the job description.
Yeah.
So this means that you're going to have to modify your resume a little bit more than normal, but it would land you a interview at whatever company that you're looking for. So ensure that your skills match the skills that their objectives within their job description. Another tip is to ensure that when they ask you what you want to be paid, you ask them what the salary range is for the position. This is because when you post a job requisition, you have to have an approved salary range. The salary range could be $60,000 to $85,000. And you're going to lowball yourself and say $50,000 because that would be enough for you to get in the door.
Right.
So asking their salary range, that will give you visibility into what the role is being paid out. And then you can say, hey, put me in the middle of that. So if it's 60 to 85, you can say, put me at 72.5, right? And then after you finish those interviews and you've done good and they offer you the position, then you can follow up and you can say, I think that actually I should be getting paid $80,000 because given my skill set, given my experience, I know that I will excel within this role and I plan to take this role in a dynamic direction, and it's going to propel things for the company. So I really feel like I should be getting paid $80,000. Mm. And they will meet you with that because they were already going to pay out $80,000 to someone that had asked for it from jump anyway. Mm-hmm. They've allotted $80,000 out of their budget for this new person's salary. So ask for what you feel like you deserve if it's within range. Never lowball yourself.
And do you have any tips for how to prepare for an interview with a company?
Absolutely. Learn everything that you can about the company. And then once you know what type of environment it is, if it's retail, if it's manufacturing, then you go online and you look for interview questions that are centered around what they could possibly ask you, because they are going to be either behavioral based interview questions or technical based interview questions. And you just want to write some questions down and then ask someone to interview you.
Mm.
Get dressed up for the interview, have a mock interview. That will help cure your nerves. That will help you get prepared. You can study the company. And I also find this to be a great thing too. Ask questions, ask them why they're hiring for this role. Ask them, how was the person successful in the last role? Ask them what challenges they're facing within the organization. The interview is not just a one-way thing. You're interviewing them to see if they are also a good fit for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to know what the culture of the company is like. Yeah. You want to know what issues that they're facing. You want to know, do they have integrity with these things? And it also allows you to have insight on what the interviewer actually thinks of the company.
Interesting. Interesting. What if, okay, another good thing. I want more tips. What if you're interviewing for a different position in a company that either you've already worked at before or you're currently working at?
Well, I feel like internal candidates kind of already have like a step ahead of external candidates because companies like to hire within just because you don't have to pay a onboarding cost for, depending on the company, can be upwards to $10,000 to $45,000 to onboard a new hire. So to have someone within your organization that's already working there move over to another position, that costs the company nothing.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are getting secrets because I didn't know this. Like, I've always seen, like, especially with universities, like, they'll have, like, a public posting. I myself have applied to certain university positions, and there's a public posting, but, they always say priority to people who apply within the company. Almost regardless of experience, like they will prioritize taking somebody who has a little bit less experience but works in the company over somebody who has all of the experience.
Because they can just train you.
Right.
Because you think about it like this. If this person in the company is making $35,000 and the role that they're moving to could just pay them $15,000 more, whereas if they were to do external candidates, maybe they want $65,000, and then you still have to pay for health benefits, you still have to pay for all of those onboarding costs, you have to pay for the trainings, and then this person may not even work out.
Right.
They may get in the company and be like, I hate it, and then leave, and then that ups your turnover rate and things like that. So promoting within always boost the employee morale and company culture and things like that. So there are benefits in both internal and external hires. Yeah.
What is an onboarding cost? Like, what does that entail?
Onboarding cost is just, again, like training, just having the person complete their background check, their drug screen, and the cost related to new employee orientation, paying for the things that they'll need. So if you give a company mug, if you give this and that, all of those things that come into that. And then also the succession planning that comes along with it as well to ensure that the person is successful during that first 30 days, 60 days, and 90 days so that they enjoy the culture of the company and then want to continue working there.
You know, that's interesting because oftentimes as a person who is like an employee, I don't think about that kind of stuff. But if the company has business cards, personalized business cards for everybody, that's a certain amount of money. If everybody has offices and there's name tags on the offices, that's a certain amount. And if they're like plaques, not tags, not like paper that you just slide into a plastic thing, but like an actually engraved, that's a certain amount of money.
Paying for a platform service that houses the training that one would need, because it depends on the role, right? Mm-hmm. Like you may need detailed training, and then you may have to have someone from another department come and train this person. And then, so that's taking away from their department. So we got to get somebody else in there. So it's just a lot of extra things that go into onboarding that people don't always have that visibility to see.
Right. And like even in like a retail setting, there's a certain amount of time that's going to pass before that person is going to be productive in terms of, say, for example, if you're working in a retail place where there's like a person being productive actually enhances your sales, like that person who's coming in, say they're a sales rep, they're going to be moving at a much slower rate than one of your more experienced people, which therefore means that whatever time that you're taking to train them is actually costing you more than the money that they're bringing in. These are things that you don't really think about that is like added cost. And now you understand. I understand a bit better why these organizations will choose will choose.
And then you also have organizations that will have, like, they'll post a job posting. Okay, and I say this specifically with American Express because this is how a lot of people were able to move up within American Express.
Right.
It's extremely hard to land an interview with American Express as a business analyst, senior analyst, director, things like that. So what people would do is they would go look for the contract position, meaning they're going to try you out on a contract basis. And then if you do good at this lower level position, then they get in, they work that lower level position until they see an opening in the actual position, like an analyst, data engineering, things like that. Yeah. And then they apply because they know that American Express promotes within.
Right.
They promote all of it. And Amazon is the exact same way. So if you were ever to look for getting into Amazon and the manufacturing, you work in the manufacturing part, you can easily get over into corporate because they, again, they promote within. And that's another tip for you guys. If you're ever looking at an organization and you know this is the organization that you want to work for and you're not having any luck getting the position that you are looking for,
yeah,
you may just have to either do it as a contract to begin with, or you might have to take a lower level position and then just wait for another opportunity to open up and apply within, and then, you know, you'll get it.
That is extremely interesting. Thank you for sharing, like, some of the behind the scenes, because these are things that you don't think about as, like, someone trying to get into a company. Like, You don't know this stuff. You don't have this information, just generally speaking. So this is valuable information to have. I feel like it's like a pot of gold.
make sure that after every interview, you're sending some form of a thank you.
Mm.
And as the interviews progress, you have to send a more detailed thank you. You can't send the same one. Right. So for me, typically when I'm interviewing or when I've interviewed for roles, I'll meet like the lower level, like the recruiter first. And then the second interview will be like the hiring manager. And then after that, it's like the VP or things like that. So you have to, the thank you letters have to be more detailed, more centered around what you guys have discussed, your perspective and where you can take the company and things like that. So,
Okay.
That thank you email bridges that gap, and it allows you to have that form of communication so that when you do want to follow up, let's say you haven't received feedback and you want to follow up and say, hey, I just want to send a quick follow up. I hadn't heard anything since I sent the thank you email, and I just wanted to check in to see what's the progress on the job requisition. Are you guys still interviewing? Do you have an end date on when you guys will be filling the position? Just wanted to check in to see, you know, the progress.
Excellent. Well, you heard it here, folks. Some tips on how you should be interviewing, how you should be following up, how you should be preparing for your interviews, all of that. Brittany, thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule to be here this evening.
Thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure. Anytime you want to come back on and, you know, maybe after you finish your master's degree and you want to give some more tips and tricks and whatnot, we'd be happy to have you.
You got to bring me back on because I was told we were going to talk about like some love stuff too, some soul perspective stuff, but I'm here for it.
Listen, business perspective is also soul perspective, you know.
It is.
It's all a part of it.
It is.
But, you know, if you want to talk about love, we can make it happen. We can make that happen at another date. Thank you so much once again. Ladies and gentlemen. This is Soul Perspectives. We're here every Tuesday evening from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you want to listen to the archives because you missed our shows, you're interested in past shows, just go to ckut.ca and click on Programming in the Archives. Scroll down to Tuesday at 7 to 8:30 p.m. and you'll find us. 8:31, the archive of this show is going to be up on the website. But for now, that's it. Join us again next week, Tuesday, for another evening of Soul Perspectives. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and you've been listening to CKUT on 90.3 FM.
If you made a compensation claim for abuse at an Indian residential school, the records of your claim are secure. They will be destroyed in September 2027 unless you choose to keep them or share them. To learn more, call toll-free
MTL versus racisme.
Montreal versus racism.
MTL versus racisme.
A concert united against racism and discrimination.
Un concert uni contre racisme et la discrimination.
Saturday, the 10th of September, 6 to 10 p.m. in Girouard Park.
Samedi, le 10 septembre, 18h à 22h, à Parc Girouard, NDG.
Avec des performances de...
Jonathan Emile.
Charlotte.
Maritza.
Rami Picasso.
Paul Carniello.
DJ Lady Oracle.
Collecte de fonds pour Résilience Montréal.
Raising money for Resilience Montreal.
Tout le monde et tous les âges sont bienvenus.
Everybody is welcome.
This is a CKUT co-presentation.
You know it's the boy Dash all the way from Grenada and you tune in to CKUT 90.3 FM.
We'll be right back.